Welcome to the Real Film Nerds Podcast.
Welcome back, Nerderinos, to another exciting episode of the Real Film Nerds Podcast. Yes, Mike and I just recorded number 368, so that would make this Real Film Nerds Podcast 369, dude!
Wow, dude, 369. Wow, okay, cool.
So this week, this day, this whatever pod, I'm just going to go with pod. This pod, we chat about Civil War, the movie that is making a lot of controversy across the country, but not at the same time. It's weird. Critics love it. Some people hate it. Some people are in the middle. This is an odd one. This one is personal to me in a lot of ways because this is kind of a shining light on my former career that I love desperately and sad had to go away. And yeah, shit like this pretty much barely exists today. So it's interesting that that is the basis of this film. So anyways, Mike, why don't you go ahead and give us the breakdown for Alex Garland's Civil War?
All right, Matt. Like you said, Alex Garland directed and wrote this. This movie is starring Kirsten Dunst, Wagner Moura, Kaylee Spaney, and Stephen McKinley Henderson. So this is a journey across a dystopian future America, following a team of military embedded journalists as they race against time to reach DC before rebel factions descend upon the White House.
Okay, Mike, so Civil War, since I had to give my first impressions on Monkey Man, you have to go with yours this time because, you know, I got some thoughts.
Yeah.
You know, I want to know yours.
I'm gonna be giving you lots of questions about you know, your one of your former careers, but before we get to that, man, I really liked it. I liked the approach to this movie. I liked the way that it didn't dive into politics, but did. It was like a lot of interesting ways of looking at stuff. Kind of a, I don't know, non-objective, like the way that news is supposed to be, kind of like they're just like, hey, we're just here for the story. There's no opinions really given that much in the movie. There's like a hint.
That's called opinions. Journalism, Mike. That's what that's called.
Yeah. But there was like a hint of like a couple of the characters. And there's really only four characters in this, most of this movie. I mean, there's four main characters. And I loved it. It's really intense, this movie. And it also is more terrifying than probably other things because it seemed realistic. I don't know.
Okay, well, it's going to be one of those podcasts, Mike.
Uh-oh. Matt doesn't think it at all. Let's see.
I did not think this movie was great. I didn't think it was bad, but I didn't think it was great. I think it was very hollow. I think it was, the story was not super great. I'm fine with him not being opinionated, but there's just a lot of things when we get into the spoiler section that I will discuss. Not a lot, but some I will bring up because we're trying to keep these kind of short so we can get two done. But overall, it's okay. A little disappointed because I'm a big fan of Alex Garland, and I don't think this is his best work, but it's mostly his story. Like, his shooting was great. The acting was great. The action, the sets, I think everything was pretty spot on this film. I just really had a problem with the story. I just really did. And again, I'm trying not to spoil it, so I'm going to wait to explain why I didn't like it based on the story until later. But here's one that is not a spoiler or kind of a spoiler. I call bullshit on one of the PJs running around shooting film. because the reason why digital took off so fast and hard and was so successful is because photojournalists adopted it hard and fast because, oh my God, I can take a digital image and have it on the plate and ready to go within seconds versus having to develop film, developing a print, developing all this other stuff. I mean, you want to talk about the photographers that embraced digital photography more than anyone ever was photojournalists because of the speed.
I thought that was a little bit weird, Matt. I'm not going to lie, because I was like, why would you have cameras that don't have, like, especially in this kind of like, civil war when like supplies are short or whatever. And like what? Well, like that seemed odd to me.
And the other thing too, is this is supposed to be 20 years in the future. So how much film is really going to be around? How much chemicals, developers? I mean, Mike, you took photography, you did black and white photography, and you know this, maybe not, but in the photojournalism world, even when I was shooting film before we transitioned into digital, we always shot color film. You know why? Because you can always take color out, but you can never put it back in. So her being a quote-unquote photojournalist is bullshit, because you would be shooting digitally, especially if you're being paid by someone. You would not be shooting black and white. Even if you were shooting film, you'd be shooting color, because you would want to have that as an option. Now, I understand it's what it is. He explains that. I've watched a lot of videos on this, obviously, because of the photojournalism thing. I've watched a lot of critics, a lot of interviews with Alex Garland about this. Her carrying a film body, especially a Nikon F body, which is really old. We're talking like 80s was probably the last time people were using those bodies. It's his little call out to the original photojournalists during wartime of the 60s specifically, because that's the time frame when he grew up and he's most familiar with. And so it's his call out to the 60s war photographers, is having one of the leads carry film, specifically a Nikon F body.
Okay. Yeah, Matt, I haven't even gotten to that part, but I will bring it up a little bit. Obviously Nikon was featured here. There's really only two cameras when it comes down to it, right, Matt?
Not anymore.
Really? What do we got now?
So,
is there Sony?
So
too?
Mirrorless has taken off. Everyone in most photojournalists I know, professional photojournalists, are not going with the big two anymore. Sony has come on the scene with their mirrorless technology about 15-ish years ago. Hold on, I'm trying to think. No, probably closer to 10 years ago-ish. And they took the mirrorless world by storm. Most photojournalists and most newspapers and photojourn wire surfaces I know are all shooting Sony. AP, The Republic, my buddy Daryl, everybody is shooting Sony, because Sony, the advances in Sony are so high, and Sony is also the manufacturer of digital camera sensors. They've been developing them for Sony and Nikon and everyone else for years. So, of course, they take the best sensors they make and put them in their cameras. And then yeah. Sell the rest to Canon and Nikon.
Okay. All right.
So I am possibly in the process of switching to mirrorless. I've resisted because I can't afford it. But I might have to do it this year. But it's going to be like a $20,000 kind of investment, which sucks.
Wow. Okay.
So that's what Kirsten Dunst is shooting in this film, is Sony. And they covered all the Sony stuff up with stickers.
Oh, that's funny. This movie, Matt, I didn't realize it was supposed to be in the future. I thought it was supposed to be like tomorrow.
It's but, kind of tomorrow, but they said it's about 20 years, is what Alex Garland said in interviews.
Okay. You know, it was interesting, the having all the shooting and stuff, and like the I guess I don't want to get into spoilers quite yet because we haven't gotten there. But Matt, I will ask you, being a former photojournalist, still photo sometimes on the side.
I'm a freelancer now. Yeah, I mean, yeah. I still shoot. I still shoot for newspapers. I still shoot for magazines if they call. But I basically don't do it 70 hours a week anymore. I'd do it maybe 10. But anyway, sorry, Mike, to interrupt. Go ahead.
Yeah. Do you think you would ever, did you ever want, I don't know if you did or not, did you ever want to do war photography?
Mike, of course I did. I really wanted to be a war photographer when I was in college. I have my favorite war photographer that's, I don't know if he's still shooting or not now. He might have retired. I'll have to look it up. But his name is James Nashway. And I learned about him when I was in college. He dedicated his life to war photography. He's never had any kids. He's never had any serious relationships. All he has done his whole life is be a war photographer. And he only shot black and white film, like a typical Magnum or any other, you know, photojournalist like that. But he has a documentary that was done on him that came out my sophomore year of college. And you can get it on Amazon, but it's $30 and it's a DVD. It's not Blu-ray. It's not streaming any of that shit. But it truly shows you the shit he went through. And it shows you some of the stuff he goes on. Because what he did is he wore a backpack with a camera on it. This was before GoPros, with a backpack with a video camera and battery and stuff, and had it on his camera. And so as he's running around shooting stills, you hear his camera going off because he's videotaping what he's doing. It's pretty wild.
Wow.
But
wow, that is pretty crazy.
Do you know the CNN international correspondent Christian Amanpour? World renowned, incredible journalist. You know that name?
It sounds familiar.
Yeah, she's very well known. Well, she's in it because she goes on some of the stuff that he goes on back when she was still cutting her teeth, before she was super famous and big now. And so anyways, make a long story short. Yes, I wanted to be a war photographer. I can talk hours about this. What has happened to war photographers since probably the past 10 years has almost set the entire industry on its head, even more than what happened to me. War photographers typically don't have media outlets behind them anymore. If you want to be a war photographer, you have to fund your own way. You have to go to the war zone. You have to find your own translator. You have to find your own way to be protected. You have to find all your own shit. And you're not there under the, say the name, what I mean by name, I mean like New York Times or Associated Press. Like, they still have a handful of those, but for the most part, most of the war photographers you see today are people that are paying their own way to be there. And then there's no guarantee if you get captured, the New York Times or AP or whatever would fight to try and get you back. This, they're just like, oh, another dead American kind of thing. It's frightening what has happened to war photography.
So it's almost more like you're a freelancer that just happens to be at the war, and like sometimes you can sell your pictures
if you get lucky. Yes. So that's that's what happened in war photography. Specifically got it even before like the regular photojournalism. Now, like I'm saying, there's always staffers, but there's not nearly as many staffers as there used to be, and they're not as protected as they used to be, because there's just not as many of them. Like, there's maybe, okay, so I'll put it in perspective. I'm just going to use the Arizona Republic, even though they don't have quote-unquote war photographers. So Gannett is the parent company of the Arizona Republic, and the USA Today. USA Today is the flagship of Gannett. Arizona Republic is its second biggest paper besides USA Today. They will steal a lot of the Arizona Republic photographers to go do national stuff, like the Olympics and stuff like that, from the Republic. The Arizona Republic, back when I was in college and when I was first cutting my teeth as a photojournalist, had 30 photojournalists covering the entire state of Arizona. 30. Because they had a photographer in Flagstaff, they had one down in Sierra Vista, they had one in Tucson, they had photographers everywhere. Because they called themselves a state paper, and they wanted to stick to that. That was also when the paper was like an inch freaking thick, too.
Wow.
As of today, 2024... guess how many staff photographers they have, Mike?
Two.
Five. This is a multi-million dollar company, and they have five photographers. So how many do you think they're sending over to war zones? Not very many.
Yeah. Yeah. Nah. Yeah, they can't afford to lose anybody. Like they can't even afford to lose them just covering stories locally,
yep.
Like, you know, like what, or whatever, or even nationally.
Right. So to put in perspective, my buddy Patrick, who's one of their staffers still, he's been there a long time now. I love Patrick. He's a good dude. He doesn't go to the Arizona Rattlers games because he knows I'm the team photographer, and that I will send the Arizona Republic photos. So he's too busy doing other things.
Okay.
So that's one of the things that's happened in my industry. See, you got me. You opened the box, dude, and Pandora's box of photojournalism for me. But anyways, yes, I wanted to be a war photographer. I would love to be a war photographer to this day, but it's not in the cards.
Okay. All right. I did open the Pandora's box. I knew it's something very personal, though. So, like, I mean, when I saw we were to be doing this movie, I was like, dude, Matt, it's about photojournalism. You're like, what? I think you didn't know that.
I had no clue. I thought it was just about journalism. I didn't know it was a photojournalist, yeah. Played by Kirsten Dunst, who, she's only 41, dude, and she looks like she's a lot older than that. She looks very tired and weathered in this film, which I think works really well.
Yeah, well, she looked beat up.
She's supposed to be the burnt-out war photographer that has no more, I don't want to say soul left, but no more compassion left because she's just seen so much death and destruction and murder and the horrible side, and she's PTSD'd out to the point where she just doesn't care about life or her own life anymore.
Right. Yeah. So before we get into some of that stuff, Matt, I'm just going to ask you, what are you drinking this fine morning, evening, afternoon?
Well, Mike, thanks for asking. So I got up, I went to the fridge, and I got myself a beer. I'm drinking a delicious Michelob Ultra.
Ooh, excellent, excellent.
What IPA do you have, Mike? I know you're itching to tell me.
Yeah, well, I'm drinking another one of those Wild Range IPAs from Aldi, our favorite no-name brand store or whatever.
Dude, I didn't know this, though. Did you know that Aldi and Trader Joe's are owned by the same people?
No, but that makes sense because they have a very similar marketing and like style.
I had no clue. It's pretty cool. I was reading an article about how them trying to bring Aldi here, and they're like, yeah, the parent company that also owns Trader Joe's. And we have a Trader Joe's.
Oh, well, then you're guaranteed, dude. It's already done.
Good old TJ's. Deal. Yep.
TJ's. Okay. All right.
That's what I call it. Trader Joe's, TJ's.
Gotcha.
So, all right, Mike, let me ask you the most important question of the podcast. Mike, what is this week's Civil War-based dad joke?
I got dad jokes. I don't think they understand, though. Gotta think I'm funny. Other people never laugh, though. Dad jokes.
All right. Why did the soldier break up with his calculator?
Because it couldn't do math?
Because it couldn't count on him during the Civil War.
Wow. Okay. See, that wouldn't have made sense on the last podcast. I'm glad you held on to it.
Yeah. No, that was... Yeah. Wow.
No, it works. It works. It works, Mike. Okay. All right. Here we go. My favorite question of the podcast, Mike. How does Civil War relate to the Marvel Cinematic Universe?
All right. So, none of our main stars in this were part of any MCU, so I had to dig into the makeup department, and I found Bridget Kreider, who worked on Spider-Man No Way Home.
Kirsten Dunst, kinda, but it was the...
I wasn't gonna do that.
Yeah, it's the Sony universe, which they said does exist in the Marvel universe, but that's only after they cut all those deals and after the last film, and she doesn't actually make an appearance in that film. So yeah, Mike, good on you for not going the easy way out. So I applaud you.
Yeah, that was my only, like, yeah. Matt, believe it or not, I worked at movie theater 2002 when the Spider-Man came out, and it was crazy, and general manager didn't think it would do well. He's like, those comic book movies never do well.
And it did fucking gangbusters, because I still love that Spider-Man, dude. I really do. Kirsten Dunst was fantastic. Everybody was great in that original trilogy. And it was Sam Raimi.
It was Sam Raimi, and it made so much money we could not keep up. It was crazy, dude. It was crazy.
I love Sam Raimi. He's awesome.
Yeah, it's hard to believe that was 22 years ago. Anyway, moving on.
Feel old yet? Because I sure as hell do.
That was back when there was film and the projectors, Matt. That was back when you used film and cameras.
That was back when I was shooting film for newspapers. Yep.
Wow. Crazy, dude. Crazy. Crazy times. All right. So, Matt, we've already talked a lot about war photography and whatnot. But
tread lightly, Mike. You know I'll go off.
let's talk about what is the aspects of the story that you didn't like now that we're in the spoiler section.
Oh, okay, great. Okay, I'm down for this. All right, so the biggest problem I have story-wise is they don't really explain who's good or who's bad or why certain things are happening or why things are going this way or why Texas and California have teamed up, which is fine, the Texas and California teaming up kind of thing, but they don't explain really anything, so you don't know what to, like, if you should be upset that the president of the United States just got executed or if you should be joyous. Like, it's just so open-ended. There's no character development really at all on any of our main characters. We know the one guy is what's left of the New York Times. We know Kirsten Dunst is a photojournalist for years. We know the one girl is trying to cut her teeth at it. And then the one guy is just a journalist. So does he do video? No, he doesn't have a video camera. He must be a reporter. He wants like one quote from the president, right? So there's just no substance. There's just no substance whatsoever in this film.
I don't know. I didn't get that at all, man. On this one, I like the open-endedness because I don't think it mattered.
So the point of the whole film then is that war is bad. Well, you know what, Mike? I knew that going in.
Well, there you go, dude. You just gave away the whole huge spoiler.
War is bad. Well, no shit. I knew that.
Yeah, I mean, but that's... I feel like that was the ultimate thing just to talk. Yeah, war's bad, but also Civil War is just... It's not two sides really fighting against each other, like, cut and dry.
No.
It's very confusing, right? Like, there's people are just like, well, you know, I'll do this. Like, the one town they went to, and it's, like, Stepford or whatever, and everything seems fine, and they get all freaked out. But then there are, like, some people on roofs, and they're like, oh, okay, I feel a little better.
Yeah, they're overwatching, like, everyone to make sure no one fucks around. They're basically doing their own policing with snipers. But
yeah,
that's a great analogy of thinking about it, because that scene with the snipers that are lying in the Christmas display and the dude's taking pot shots at them and then they're taking pot shots back, that was probably one of the better scenes in the film because they don't get anything out of it. They're like, no, they are shooting at us, so we're shooting back at them. Like, they had no idea if whose side they were on or what was going on, but they were taking shots at them, and so they were just straight up looking to shoot them back. That was it.
Yeah. Matt, the scene at the gas station with the weird dude and the people that I honestly thought were dead but weren't dead.
I thought they were dead too. Yeah.
That was even more creepy because they were alive, kind of. But he's like, yeah, I went to high school with this guy. It was just like, what is going on? Like, I think it helped set this, like, wow, stuff's just, like, things are bad, right? You just don't know. And then the final thing was the crazy thing with the, I'm forgetting his name now. He had red glasses in this.
Yeah, Jesse Plemons.
Yeah, Jesse Plemons' character, who, I mean, he's barely in it, but, I mean, his character was great for what it was.
You mean Kirsten Dunst's husband?
Oh, they are married, huh?
They are.
Oh, I even forgot about that. Okay.
They have like 5 kids too, I think.
Oh, wow. Well, that's cool. But anyway, that scene was just, I don't know. I feel like that was like really hammered home just how crazy and like just things are during Civil War. I don't know.
So tell me how you interpret that scene, because my nephew told me how he interpreted it, and I thought he interpreted it very, very wrong.
I guess what he, like what I thought was happening, like yes. In the overall?
Yes.
Okay. Well, my thought is, and maybe I'm wrong as well, Matt, was Jesse Plemons' character was, they felt their job in the Civil Wars to go and execute people that, they didn't think were American enough, whatever that means. So when he starts asking them about where they're from and what they're doing and stuff, that's kind of what I got, but like I didn't know if there's anything more than that, because we don't get a lot, like you've reiterated,
right?
But that was my interpretation. They had take it upon themselves to change America to only have what they considered the correct Americans, somewhat like what the Nazis kind of were doing in World War II.
Yes, that's getting on to more what I saw. My nephew, and I told him I believe he was wrong, said that is the military that the president is in charge of, and he ordered them to do that kind of stuff. And I said, clearly, you were not paying attention and watching the same film I was, because this is my interpretation of it. So, spoilers. Remember that, everybody. Spoilers. Super spoilers. That is a mass grave. There wasn't a whole lot of long shots on the mass grave, but there was some. I don't know if you caught this or not, Mike. Every single person that was in the mass grave, how do I put this politely, was not white. So what that tells me is that Jesse Plemons and his crew that he was running around with were some form of extreme white supremacists, and they were taking it upon themselves to execute and murder everyone that basically wasn't white and quote unquote American.
The long shot, I didn't catch everything in it, but I got the gist, and that is what I thought as well, especially after him saying the, the little scene about where you from and American, like, but.
Right. What kind of American are you?
Yeah. What kind of American are you? But the them being part of the military, I have no clue, but I'm pretty sure not, because they just had kind of BDU. Like, they didn't look organized. But like, that was a kind of the movie anyway. When we were on that one scene, Matt, where they go, and it looks like the citizens are fighting back against a military group. You don't know anything, right? You don't know what the citizen, like the group that's like attack, like, you know, like the guy that was stuck at the column, and then the guy who was like screaming for help. Like,
now, are you talking about the one where they went over the next morning and were embedded with
yes.
the? Okay, yeah. So those I would consider mercenaries, because they had military training to a degree, but they were just more like normal citizens. They were more like mercs, in my opinion, on that, versus the kind of white supremacist extremists that Jesse Plemons' group was. Because, you know, even if you pay attention to the film, the military that's still representing the United States government is in uniform, still military, very military. Well, the Western forces clearly were former military because that's where all their equipment is from, but they also acted like military. You didn't see them wearing red glasses. You didn't see them holding their guns weird ways. You didn't see them with weird, funky haircuts. They still looked organized and military, even though they were a quote-unquote rebel faction. Whereas Jesse Plemons' character, that whole scene, he's wearing pink glasses. He's not really well put together. It's camouflage, yes, but just because it's camouflage doesn't mean it's military. Like, I have camouflage in my freaking closet right now because I used to use it for paintballing and stuff when I was younger. Doesn't mean I'm in the military.
Yeah, yeah. Or you could use it for hunting, dude.
Or hunting, correct. But that's my point. It's just because he was wearing camouflage doesn't mean he was in the military. And my nephew was trying to put too much of his own, in my opinion, personal agenda into his viewing of this film, and I shot it down quickly, and he didn't like that.
Yeah. So, all right, Matt. Well, I think
we had enough.
We have talked. Yeah, well, I think we have talked a lot, and I know you could talk about war journalism and like photography stuff.
I love it. It's my passion, dude. It was my passion. Yeah. Still is. I just can't do it for a living.
Yeah. Well, it was featured on a movie.
Yeah, it was, So I'll put it out this way before I give my rating, because I want you to go first. But I'll put it this way, Mike. I will probably purchase this film. I don't know if I'm going to purchase it like right off the bat, like right when it comes out kind of thing, but I will probably own it at some point just because it was based on photojournalism. And I love Alex Garland. Ex Machina was incredible. Annihilation was incredible. I love his sci-fi stuff. So I'm just going to put it out there. I will probably buy this film, just probably not right off the bat. But anyways, Mike, how many reels do you give Civil War?
All right, Matt. Like I said, I liked this movie. I liked the way that it was presented. I liked the story. So I'm going to give this 4 reels out of 5.
Okay. Well, fine. The reason why this gets such a higher rating for me than what I probably should give it is because of the photojournalism aspect and the things that were true. Like the reference to Lee Miller was true, and there's lots of things that are true, and clearly they tried really, really hard. Kirsten Dunst even carried around a camera for a long time trying to get used to holding it and holding it properly, and she still needed some work, but she did better than an actor holding it, I guess you would say. But Mike, I'm not as bad as you think. I give it 3 out of 5 reels.
Oh, okay. All right, man. You sounded like you were just going to tear it apart.
No.
You were.
Mm-hmm. No, I should, but no, the photojournalism aspect and the highlight on it and the fact that they really did try hard to make it that way and neutral and truly make it a love letter for journalism and how important journalism really is, that alone for me right there was 2 reels, like alone. No matter how bad the story was, no matter how bad everything else was, the pure and simple fact that they're trying to help make a career that I think is very important to this country and to this world that is quickly going away, that's 2 reels right there for me all day.
All right. Oh, I guess one thing I didn't really, obviously almost just foreshadowing or whatever, the beginning, the our novice photojournalist almost gets like blown up, like in Kirsten Dunst's character, is like, hey, come here. And saves her, pretty much, like drags her.
Right, yeah, she grabs her. Yeah, I almost completely forget about that scene because there's so much more to it. But did you realize, I didn't realize this until afterwards and I listened to some of Alex Garland speaking. Do you realize what they were fighting over when that bomb went off and all that?
Water,
yes,
I thought.
Water. I had no clue it was water. I thought it was gasoline. Yeah.
No, it's not very obvious, right? But if you looked in the back, the little tanker thing, it has little things that kind of say something about water or something. I was like, oh yeah, that's over water.
Dude, that's frightening. Yeah. That's the more frightening shit, is the shit that possibly could happen.
Yeah, no, that's why this movie was scary, man. Because it's like, this is stuff I could see happening.
Oh, easily. Easily. Especially with our recent massive shakeup in the Middle East now. I don't know if you're paying attention to that or not.
Oh, yeah.
Ooh,
man.
Dude.
No.
Iran and Israel? Come on. That's going to be really bad.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. So I guess it was like foreshadowing, right?
Sure.
So she saves her there, and then, you know, the end, she saves her again, but it was because she was just being too, like, you know, you kind of saw that she was transforming to be like a photojournalist, but like she was trying to get too many crazy shots. Like,
she was pushing the limits. And that is one of those things that they talk about in any photojournalism documentary. There's another one. It was out on Netflix. I don't know if it's on Netflix anymore. Santos and I actually reviewed it together for a podcast where you were gone many years ago now. But that's the reality when it comes to war photographers. You either are really good at it and you know how to anticipate things and you live forever. So like I was talking about James Nashaway before, he had never gotten shot. I mean, he had gotten illnesses and stuff and maybe shot here and there, but nothing super life threatening until, most recent, Iraq Afghanistan war. And he had been covering things for 30, 40 years and he never had anything super threatening until the, Iraq-Afghanistan war, and he had to go back and be put in a hospital and all kinds of stuff. But anyways, the point of the story is that someone like that is one example where they never really got life-threatening stuff. They got diseases and all that other shit, but not like a limb blown off or, you know, something like that. The other flip of the coin, there's really no middle, is you die. Like, as a war photographer, like you just push the limit too far and you just die. Yeah. That's it.
Yeah, you just die. Yeah.
Because you don't have that feeling and you're cocky as shit and you just get picked off. Because all it takes is one bullet, man. That's all it takes.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So I thought that scene was a little bit interesting in the fact that she had asked Kirsten Dunst if she got shot, you know, would she have taken a picture of her? And Kirsten Dunst, I don't think, answered. And later on, one of our characters, was it Sammy? Really like Sammy, his character.
Yes, the New York Times reporter. Yeah.
Yeah, he gets shot and she does have pictures of him and then she deletes them. And then we get to the new photojournalist, and she gets shots of Kirsten Dunst's character getting basically killed in front of her eyes.
Even though the reason why she was being killed was because of her dumbass.
Yeah. And I was just like, huh. And I wonder if she kept them. I wish they would have shown that. They didn't.
I'm sure she did. It was on film.
Yeah. So anyway, that was interesting. So I'm gonna leave all that down and I think it's time to end the podcast that we were trying to keep short and we didn't keep short at all.
Sorry, dude. All right. It was a tough one, man. I warned you. So anyways, next week, I think you picked it. I kind of picked it. It's kind of what I was leaning towards too. The new Guy Ritchie film, or Guy Ritchie joint, I guess is what he calls him, right?
No, I think that's Spike Lee.
Spike Lee that calls him joints. Well, okay. The new Guy Ritchie film, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Another war movie, but this one is a war comedy.
Right. Apparently, it's based on the true story of declassified info that the British government released when they wanted to do some stuff that wouldn't have been taken kindly, I guess. So anyway, we'll find out more.
It's kind of the founding of the British SAS during World War II.
Okay.
Kinda.
All right.
Kinda. So we'll see how it goes. I don't know. I haven't seen the film. I've watched the trailers. They look great. It's still an action film. This is three action films in a row, but this one is an action comedy. So hopefully it's good. I like Guy Ritchie, so I think it's going to be great.
Yeah, I think this is right up his alley. I think this is a good one.
Well, all right, Mike.
It's got Reacher in it. Alan Richardson's in it.
And Henry Cavill,
yeah.
That's who I care about. Superman.
All right.
Well, Superman. Dude, it also has Cary Elwes from, Robin Hood Men in Tights.
Nice.
And
yes, it does.
Princess Bride.
Yes.
So It'll be fun. I think it'll be fun, Mike.
All right.
Okay, I'm done.
Okay.
I'm done. I swear to God, I'm done talking about photojournalism, Mike. Go.
All right. So with that, everybody, thanks for listening. Make sure to follow us on the socials, Instagram, Twitter, X, and Facebook or Meta, whatever it is. And we'll see you next week for our new pod on, what is it called?
Now you want me to talk. The Ministry
of Ungentlemanly.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Dude, I had to look it up. This title is way too long.
Yeah, the title's long, and it's a tough one to say. But all right. Well, for that one. All right. Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, that one. We'll get that one. Bye.
Thank you for listening to The Real Film Nerds. Now, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Real Film Nerds. Now, go out and catch a movie.
Welcome, everyone, to Ma Hinshaw Loses Her Cookie, episode 59, Civil War. Hi, Matt.
Now you're really grumpy.
No, I'm not grumpy.
You're starting a Hinshaw Civil War.
Okay, I am. No, I'm not. I was very confused when I heard, oh, good, Civil War. And then, it was a different Civil War, all right.
Mm-hmm. Well, first off, let's apologize for your last podcast because I just tried to look at it and listen to it before we started recording this one. And there's a good solid, like, 30-second chunk that just is gone. And I don't know what happened to it. So, shit happens. Sorry, everyone. Ma did not fall asleep during Monkey Man. She watched it. That about sums up the last one. Okay, ready, set, go. Civil War, and woo!
Yes, I did fall asleep at the beginning of this one.
Oh, shit.
But I did hear the president speak. But that was, and then I had a little snooze. Okay, I admit it. I can't help it. But anyway, it was interesting. I'm not saying it was interesting, but I was not crazy about it. I had issues with it, and Kirsten was convincing as a photographer to a certain point, but I didn't think she was real enthusiastic about it. And I know she'd never done that before, and maybe it came through, but...
Well, Mom, that's the point. She is supposed to be a burned out, pissed off, angry photojournalist that's been doing it too long, which is the point of her character.
I know that, but I still think if you're a photojournalist and you're covering violence and a war and stuff, you'd have a little more enthusiasm than that. She must have really been worn out. But anyway,
you have not seen many documentaries on war photographers.
Well, heck no. I haven't seen any, I don't think.
Uh-oh. Yeah, they try not to have any emotion.
Oh, okay.
It usually doesn't go well, especially when it's a country that's not yours.
Oh, okay. Yeah, that makes sense. You know. But anyway, and for some reason, and even your dad, we kind of were like, we knew that it was these two states, their militia that was, you know, caught in the Civil War. But I got confused sometimes with where they were, which direction they were going. I mean, I don't know.
You must have fallen asleep during that part because they say they are traveling from New York to Washington, D.C.
I knew they were going from there to Washington, D.C., but some of it looked like Texas, and some of it, I mean, the countryside didn't convey that sometime. I had a little bit of issues with that one. But if you like real blood guts, it's pretty blood and gutsy. There's really some bloody killing.
Well, and Mom, how many times have you driven from New York to Washington, D.C.?
Not at all.
See, then how would you know what the scenery looks like?
Well, I wouldn't. You know, that is true. You know. So maybe I'm just wrong there. But anyway,
you like the murdering.
No, I didn't. I thought it was actually, I thought it was really too brutal. Several of the episodes, I thought, were just really over the top.
Episodes? What do you mean by episodes? You mean?
Well, killings.
Okay. What killing was too brutal for you?
Well, I didn't. I don't want to describe it because
I asked you specifically. I didn't ask you to describe the film. I asked you a scene that was too brutal for you. You can talk about that.
Okay. The one with the fellas with the guns and they drove.
God, that's what the one with the fellas with the guns.
Well, but the photographers drive up on it, and they get out, and then they ask, are you an American?
So the scene with Jesse Plemons, that's the one where there is a mass grave.
Right.
Okay, see? You can describe that.
Really? I didn't want to give all of it away, but I mean, yeah. It was pretty ew, you know. And then when they get to, well, I don't know. I'm not sure what city it was, but if it was Washington, D.C., it didn't really look like that. But anyway, there was another photojournalist that came along, and she seemed to be really more into almost getting in harm's way to get the photographs.
Yes, that's the point. She is supposed to be a novice and a rookie and has never done it before.
And so that's why she would get in there where she would almost get taken out because she wanted the photographs. Right. Okay, got that there. And then also I had issues with when they finally get to the White House. And I just, to my mind's eye, said, I would have thought the president would have been out of there knowing that they were attacking the White House. I would think because they have tunnels where they can get out and stuff. And that part of it kind of bothered me. I thought there would be a heck of a lot more defense from the president's people, you know, even though he was not a good president or whatever.
They never say that he's not a good president.
Well, I thought it inferred it. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't know.
They never say that he was a good or a bad president.
Okay.
They never say if the Western forces are good or bad. That's the problems I have with the movie is that it doesn't even tell you who you're supposed to think is right and who is wrong.
That's true. And that is because, and then it was like, okay, part were from Texas, part were from California. They have totally different outlooks.
No, not part. They are from Texas and California, and they called themselves the Western Forces.
Right. But I didn't.
Not part.
I didn't think they were all really on the same page, but I guess they were. It was very, that's why I didn't think it was that good because, I mean, people left going, what? You know, it kind of really left you up in the air. And that's part of, I mean, there were good battles and some really good jump scares and everything from bombs going off, etc. But it still didn't ring my bell. And there you go, Matt. That's what I feel.
Okay, well, how many cookies do you give Civil War then?
2.5.
See, what's funny is you say you didn't like it, but yet you give it 2.5.
Well,
I think that's hilarious. You didn't like it at all, but you give it a middle of the ground score.
2.5.
If you don't like it, you give it a 1 or a 2 or a 1.5.
Well, okay, then I'll give it a 2.
No, you already said your score. No. You said it on the radio. It is 2.5.
Well, I know. That's what I said.
Your rating system is just rigged.
My rating system is weird. Okay.
No, not weird. It's rigged.
Oh, rigged. I didn't rig it. What? Never mind. Anyway, that's my view. And I know I've heard lots of people really love that movie. But like I say, I had issues with it. So that's me. All right. Can't please everybody. So, you know, go see it and judge for yourself. But when you come out of that movie, you're going, exactly what happened? Wait, what? Maybe that's what the guy who wrote it wanted to be. I don't know.
No, he was not. If you listen to any of his interviews, Mom, he was trying not to be political in any way, shape, or form.
Well, boy, he hit the money there. Because he wasn't. It wasn't political to me, except I think people put political things on it, actually. But, you know, that's another story, which I'm not going to talk about. So, okay?
All right. Well, what movie are we talking about next week?
I cannot even say the title. You have to say it because I don't have it written down. And I
why,
because
it's a swear word or what?
No, it's just a very long title and it's about World War II and it's supposed to be a true story, but I don't know the title of it. Help, Matt.
It is called The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
See there, that's very confusing. Gentlemanly Warfare.
The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare.
Holy cow. Okay.
See, if you listen to me finish my words before you start talking, you would hear the whole thing.
Oh, okay. Well, good. Thank you very much for saying it for me so that I only messed it up some.
Oh Christ. I need a cocktail.
Yeah, you go get one or a brewski, okay? Oh, that'll put you to sleep. Beer always puts me to sleep. Anyway, that's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it.
Is that how you're going to end your podcast from now on? Yes. That's my thoughts, and I'm sticking to it.
I will. I'll do that. Unless I'm in a different mood, and then I'll say something else, okay?
No.
No, okay.
Well, all right. I guess that's the end of yet another riveting episode of Ma Henshaw Loses Her Cookies, this time about the Civil War. Well, it's not the Civil War, just Civil War, directed and written by Alex Garland. Next week, The Ministry of Ungentlemanly Warfare. Thank you, everyone, for listening if you made it this far. If not, we understand. This is horrible tripe.
Bye.